hello, Jesse Thomas Cook from Monster Brawl, and welcome to Upcoming Discs.
Hi, Gino. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and yourself?
I'm doing great.
Well, listen, just had a chance last night to watch Monster Brawl for the first time. I kind of enjoyed it. There's some really cool stuff in there, that's for sure. Now, just to set this up for our audience before I talk to you, you know, this is an unusual film. This is a kind of horror film that pits eight classic monster creatures against each other in a kind of pay-per-view wrestling match type style event that takes place in an isolated graveyard. And we have David Foley and Art Hindle as the announcers. I know Jimmy Hart's in there from the real wrestling world. So you've got enough in there for fans of both the wrestling and the horror fans. So I guess the first thing that obviously comes to mind is, where the heck did this idea come from? Because it's certainly unique.
Yeah, it kind of exists in a realm outside of film in a way. But yeah, you're right. It was a hybrid idea. And it kind of dawned on me when we were just trying to think of some ideas to do some movies a few years ago. And, you know, it came to my mind, what about a movie where, you know, it's just zombies versus vampires, one of those movies. And then from there, it kind of just grew. Well, what if we actually just had a tournament of monsters fighting each other? And why not involve the cult world of professional wrestling, which has a huge following, as does monster movies. So it was kind of a hybrid beast. And setting it in the tournament format just so that it would come off as kind of a pay-per-view event where crowds of people could get together and cheer on and boo their favorite monsters or the bad guys.
Yeah, well, it certainly does, and it has the complete feel of the pay-per-view wrestling events, from the way the announcers do, from the stats and the tail of the tape stuff you do. And I got to tell you, my favorite aspects of the film, I'm not as huge a wrestling fan as I am a horror fan, so my favorite things were the backstory pieces that you did. I think the backstory pieces were, to me, the best part of the film. So where did you get the idea to kind of mix that and add that much more of the horror element instead of concentrating just on the matches themselves?
Yeah, well, because the film is set up in the tournament format, I think we needed times where we could leave the graveyard and go in another direction. And also in wrestling and WrestleManias, you'll always get kind of a little backstory, a storyline, as it were, mm-hmm. where the wrestler came from. So we devised these eight little short films just to give people a brief idea of either how the monsters got involved in the event, or sometimes just to get a glimpse of who they are.
Now, you did this on a budget, obviously, and one of the things I see you talk about in the extras on the film and also in the commentary, you talk a lot about how many different hats a lot of the people involved had to do, that, you know, for just about everybody involved with the film behind the camera ended up in front of the camera. They did multiple tasks and stuff. So I have to ask you, that's a necessity of doing a low-budget film, but did you find that to be an advantage in any other way to do that way?
We just had what we had for a budget, and we tried to make it work. And, you know, being the writer, I always had in the back of my mind what we could do on that budget. I mean, most films at this budget, you'll have one or two people in a room talking the whole film, or you'll get a documentary out of it. So, yeah, we had everyone wearing multiple hats. The producers were also the craft and catering people, right. And the production designer played three roles in the film, and we did a lot of our own props, and, you know, I personally helped build the graveyard set, so
right.
It was a big rush to get it all done and to keep it on budget. But I think when you work in a restricted budget like that, you obviously have to be creative on how you approach problems. So
but,
I think it really helps from a problem-solving perspective.
Yeah, and I guess what I meant when I said, do you find advantage of that, it seems to me that quite possibly you had a closer knit group, which maybe shows on camera as well, that you had a more camaraderie, a more community group. Don't you get that from everybody having to pull all these little jobs and help out together like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of feel like you're all there for the one goal at the end, and it just really helps for building the team. And we always work with a core key group of people that we brought on for multiple films, so we have a trust with one another, and it did really help. Everyone was there for the project and not for their own ends.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was getting at. And you also managed to pull in some good names here, and a lot of them apparently associated with your area in Canada. David Foley, of course, doing Kids in the Hall up there and being from that area quite a bit. Art Hindle, I assume, is from that area as well. So did you purposely try to look for these people who were maybe from there and had expanded their careers beyond there, or did that just fall in your lap?
Well, yeah, we're from a small town about 2 hours north of Toronto, and Art Hindle was a friend for a few years and helped us convince investors to jump on board for our company. And it turned out Art grew up in the next town over, and so did Dave Foley. So right. when we were able to approach Dave Foley, it was kind of like a homecoming for him and for Art, who both lived in the same town. It was just good to have that Canadian element for sure. But they also worked well because they know all the classic Canadian hockey announcers, and that's kind of what they played off of.
I bet so. And, you know, watching the movie sometimes, too, I couldn't help but think at times that this would have made a good skit, some of it for the kids in the hall, that you might have seen David Foley doing something like this in that kind of skit, because his announcer had a drunken Howard Cosell kind of feel for me.
Yeah, and it kind of was set up with different skits, with the different setups of each fight and that sort of thing. And obviously Dave is, you know, a seasoned veteran for that kind of comedy and that kind of writing. It did have that feel for sure.
How much of it was ad-libbed? I get the impression that there was quite a bit of ad-libbing going on here. How much of that was real true?
Surprisingly, not a lot. I mean, we would change some things on the day, but when we filmed those commentators, we didn't have any monsters in front of them. They were just, you know, speaking all of this, right. All the moves and the commentating just to the crew in front of them. And they did have a lot of lines. We had them for 3 days, and I think there was over 50 pages of script to go through. Not much ad-libbed, but some of it was, and a lot of the stuff that certainly was ad-libbed ended up making it in the final film.
Well, and a big score you also got in this film, I have to say, is getting Lance Henriksen to do the voice. You call him the voice of God. He's kind of like an omnipotent commentator on the whole thing. And I got to tell you, that man not only has done some great genre work, but his voice is quite distinctive. He does some of the Transformers and Avengers cartoon work as well. He has a very, very, very well-trained and beautiful voice. And so that was an asset to your film as well. How'd you score him?
Yeah, and also Call of Duty, the video game. We obviously know Lance from the genre world, and as it happened, he was going to be up in Toronto for the Fan Expo, the horror convention that happens every year.
Okay.
And because we work with Anchor Bay, they were bringing in Lance as one of their featured guests. So, you know, we called Lance's agent, and Lance is always there to support indie filmmakers, so he did it for next to nothing, and... you know, it's kind of a dream come true driving Lance over to this recording studio and having him say all these classic, you know, lines that are kind of in the vein of Mortal Kombat, and which also gave the film kind of a video game element to it as well.
Yes, it did. As I noticed, especially when someone do a big move, he would go extraordinary or something, just like you would expect from a video game. I absolutely got that feel from it. And then to give a nod not only from the horror people but to the wrestling world, you brought in some big wrestling. Jimmy Hart, of course, being one of the biggest names that's on there, I would think, from wrestling history going back, you know, when was his WrestleMania stuff, like 20 years ago?
Yeah, and he brought his own costume and brought the megaphone from WrestleMania 3 and regaled us with all his classic stories with Hulk Hogan. You know, he'd be on set talking to Hulk Hogan, wishing him happy birthday, and, you know, it was... kind of surreal, but nicest guy in the world and just a class act all the way. He was moving set pieces around for us, helping out. Never took, you know, wouldn't even take a drink of water or take a break. He was just, had so much energy and gave the film, you know, that kind of credibility from the wrestling perspective. And also Kevin Nash,
yes,
was a WWE champion at a time and has gotten more into acting. And we wanted him as well because obviously he's a big monster of a guy and wanted him to face Frankenstein at some point.
Yeah.
And also just a funny, very funny man. And then also Herb Dean, who's a UFC referee.
Referee.
Sort of wanted to get some kind of element from the MMA world as well.
Yeah, you certainly put a good mix in there. If I can get back to Jimmy Hart for a second, I noticed you talk about in, I don't know if it was the commentary of the extras, you talk about that originally he was going to play the Frankenstein monster's doctor, the mad scientist, and that got switched around and to the point where he does this kind of side commentary with the Ring Babes. What made that decision come about, the change from taking him from a particular role to this commentary situation?
Well, originally we had another wrestler cast as we had Roddy Piper was going to be in the film.
Oh, really?
But he got booked to do SummerSlam. So it just didn't work out, and it was looking like it was going to. So at the last minute, we decided to move Jimmy around, and I think it really helped the movie to just have that professional voice summoning these monsters out of their crypts.
Well, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine that it wasn't originally conceived, having that, what I think became a crucial part of your film was, you know, him with the megaphone and the ring babes there, and not only calling the monsters out, but offering his own commentary between the matches and just offering.
Yeah, and those were all ad lib. Those weren't in the scripts. Those fight recaps where he gets excited.
Yeah.
That was all improv, which he is obviously a master at, from doing those, you know, the fight intros in real wrestling. I don't think they ever had a lot of time to prep. So we'd always just, you know, say, Jimmy, just pick which monster you liked from that fight and just go off on a tangent. And he'd have the whole crew just laughing and crying hysterically after each take.
And it doesn't look like Jimmy was suffering too much between those ring babes, was he?
Not at all. No, he had a blast, and those ring babes went on to be in Playboy last year.
Oh,
as well.
Did they? How about that? So, what else? What's next on your What's next in your agenda? What else? What other projects do you have coming up?
We got three films this year. We just filmed the latest one in May, so 2 weeks ago we just finished,
mm-hmm.
and it's a sci-fi film called Ejecta, which is kind of a high concept sci-fi film that was written by the author of Pontypool.
Oh, okay.
Which is a zombie film. So we've kind of his name's Tony Burgess, and he lives in this area too, just like Art Hindle and Foley okay. did. So we've teamed up with him for three projects, and the next one shoots in July, and the next one is in September.
So will fans of Monster Brawl get to see a continuation here? Because I see this as something that might have been intended to be able to go further, because there's a lot of monsters out there.
Absolutely. We had a long list of monsters that didn't make the cut, and there could definitely be a sequel or a spin-offs. There's been talk of a remake, perhaps, and if that ever went through, that'd be fantastic. But if not, I could see a sequel or a franchise thing coming out of it. We'd love to obviously do it, have a crack at it again with a much larger budget.
Yeah, I can see that, and there's certainly room for this thing to continue, and I think you guys did a great job with what little money you must have had. And it's really an effort that shows a love of both the horror and wrestling genre. So I think fans of both should take a look at it. You might have, my favorite parts were the monster stuff, but, you know, wrestling people, there's plenty of that in there. So I think you got enough for everybody.
Yeah, and that's what we set out to do, to make it accessible for everyone, wrestling fans, monster fans, just anyone who wants to see a fun movie.
Well, great. Well, they're going to tell me here in a second we're running out of time, so I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Enjoy the film, and I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Thanks so much, Gino. Really appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
You too.